Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Well, this is a fun week here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, partly because we're talking about the Fantastic Food Fest that runs January 21st and 22nd. If you went to last year's event at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, you'll remember that there are plenty of chef demonstrations, and some of those are from some very high-profile names. Last year, it was Ted Allen who was the Fantastic Food Fest headliner. Well, this year, it's celeb chef Alex Guarnaschelli, New York City chef and one of my favorite judges on Chopped. She'll be doing demos at the Fantastic Food Fest here in Indianapolis, but I got a chance to talk with her on the phone last week for a bit of a preview. And speaking of previews, we also have a preview of Zoobilation, the gala fundraiser for the Indianapolis Zoo that takes place in early June. It might seem a bit early to be talking about Zoobilation right now, but what we've got for you today is a heads up, because tickets will be going on sale in February, and they usually sell out within hours. So we'll be talking today with Emily and Matt Lyle, co-chairs of the Zoobilation Restaurant Committee, about what you can expect for the zoo's massive fundraiser. Then later in today's show, we head to Fountain Square to talk with Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates about her new shop in the Indianapolis neighborhood. And we'll also talk a bit more about Eat Drink Indie's radio news segment called The Recipe Box Project. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. So here we are in the midst of January. The holidays are long since over. Valentine's Day is weeks away. It's cold and gray. Boy, do we need something fun to do, right? Which makes this the perfect time to think about cooking, or at least to watch someone else do some cooking. And if that person is a well-known celebrity chef, well, it's even more fun. So we are brightening up the weekend with an interview today with celeb chef Alex Guarnaschelli, who is headlining this weekend's Fantastic Food Fest at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. The fest runs January 21st and 22nd with hundreds of booths from all sorts of food-related businesses, as well as restaurants, stores, and food artisans. Plus, there are all those demos. I talked with Chef Alex last week about what she'll be doing at the fest, but we also talked about inspiration and where she finds it. First of all, I have to ask you, have you ever been to Indianapolis? You know, we're getting a lot of attention lately.
I think you've always gotten attention. and in the good sense. No, I never have. This will be my rookie voyage.
Oh, well, terrific. Well, that'll be fun. I hope you have time while you're here to get out and about and check out the food scene that some national magazines have been giving us a lot of good press for. So I hope so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard for me not to, you know, immerse myself in the food scene wherever I go.
Well, I bet that's one of the pluses of traveling to something like this, is you do get to check out someplace completely different.
Well, I think with something like this, where there are so many different, you know, things going on, so to speak, under one roof.
Oh, exactly. So much going on at the Fantastic Food Fest, so many exhibitors and demonstrations
exactly.
And that sort of thing.
You get a certain, I guess the word I want to use is you get a certain, like an energy coming off that many different, you know, people. I think a lot of different people just cooking, and it's really a culinary extravaganza.
Do you like that sort of thing? Do you like these kind of events?
I really do. I do. And I think, you know, this is a food fest that's in 75,000 square feet
of
indoor
big.
Space. I mean, that is really kind of tremendous.
It's pretty
big. So that's going to span, you know, from food and cooking, restaurants, food purveyors, wineries. I think it's probably one of the biggest that Indiana will ever see.
Yeah, and it's been very well accepted. It was well attended last year, and I think people are excited this year, particularly because you're going to be there. So, tell me a little bit about what you'll be doing.
I'm actually doing a couple of cooking demos, which I'm pretty excited about. So, that's really what I'm, you know, getting in front of a crowd and feeling energized. I mean, if you think about it, when you're on television and then you do things in real life in front of a live audience, I mean, it's really energizing.
Now, you know, cooking in front of people by now, you know, it must be just, you know, old hat to you now, but what was it like early on? You know, do you have a favorite kind of thing that you did early on?
You know, I talk about this a lot with Bobby Flay, in fact, how no matter how many times you do something like that, you the first time, the 50th time, you're nervous all the same.
Are you? Oh, my goodness. Really?
Oh, definitely. If you think about it, if you're on a TV set, generally there isn't an audience.
Well,
there
that's
are only
true.
Some shows like Beat Bobby Flay and Iron Chef America that have an actual audience. So you're sort of in a bubble. When you're cooking in front of a crowd and they're smelling what's cooking and they're watching you and, you know, if you cut your finger, there's no hiding.
Well, that's true. That's true. So it's really real for you.
Totally.
Has there been a favorite or most challenging, you know, sort of competition that you've been involved in?
I'd have to say I might say that it's tied between Chopped and Iron Chef. I think Iron Chef is the biggest pressure cooker, but I actually think Chopped might be the most difficult.
Oh, my goodness. Well, tell me why. Because Iron Chef looks so incredibly challenging. Not that Chopped doesn't, but...
Well, Iron Chef's like a high wire act.
Oh, okay.
And so you can sort of practice a little bit. You can get some concepts down. You can rehearse your techniques, so to speak.
Okay.
But with Chopped, I mean, you can rehearse all you want, but you're never going to know what's in the basket. And there's invariably going to be a high probability that there's an ingredient you've never worked with, you know?
Even now?
That's kind of like that element of luck that you can't do anything about.
No, so even now you would expect to be surprised by something?
You mean on Chopped?
Yeah, so there, still expect to be surprised?
Sure.
Even
after all these years. It's been on for a long time, but absolutely. It's, you know, I think that's why so many people gravitate to the show, because it has that real feeling, you know, that people feel at home through the TV set.
Well, we have been watching Chopped, watching all of you on Chopped for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and especially because of Ted Allen being from the Indianapolis area, we're all very, very fond of the show here.
He actually spoke very highly of this event to me, and that's kind of, I think, how it really came about.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yes, he was here.
By it. He came back. I remember when he came
here
back
last year, right?
It was great.
Oh, that's
What's
wonderful.
That?
I said he was here last year. A lot of people saw him there. I got to talk to him while he was here. So so that's very fun. So I'm glad you're looking forward to it. And
mm-hmm.
now, if there were a Chopped sort of challenge, what might be some of the worst things, you know, that you have worked with or that you wouldn't want to work with?
You know, chicken livers, they're really hard to cook right. And people tend to throw them in the fryer and they get overcooked.
Right.
So that's a simple-ish ingredient that's actually tough not to overcook. I would say, you know, some more exotic fruits that maybe if you didn't grow up eating them, like durian.
Sure.
That are, you know, they're just so unfamiliar with flavors. It's hard to know what to integrate them into so that they work the way they should. The biggest thing is really an inherent cultural understanding of certain ingredients. And the contestants that happen to get ingredients that maybe they grew up eating or cooking with or were exposed to in some capacity, they just have that built-in advantage, that understanding of how to use it. And that's really that little bit of luck, that little bit of, you know, je ne sais quoi that I think really makes Chopped more difficult than a lot of other competition formats. You know, we have a new show on Food Network called Cooks vs. Cons.
Right.
Which which I've been judging, hosted by Jeffrey Zakarian. Uh-huh. And it's amazing to me what people that aren't actual professional cooks can pull off.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I've seen the show, and I wondered, you know, if they're really, if they can really convince judges that they're really a cook.
Well, I'll tell you, when I started, I didn't think they could. You know, I went into the studio and I thought, oh, I'm going to know, you know, and I'm going to have to kind of pretend I don't know or,
right,
you know, feign some sort of surprise. And I'm so used to not having any of that be in the chopped format, in
right,
the sense that, you know, you know, and what you don't, it's more black and white. I was so shocked. I mean, there was a hairdresser who I would, you know, have work alongside me in my restaurant in Manhattan.
Oh, my goodness.
And a longshoreman who was unbelievable, a banker. And when they say what they do, I mean, and sometimes they say, I'm a con, and they win. And
right,
you just, you know, you sort of walk away and you think, God, you know, what do I know?
Oh, my goodness. Now, but you grew up around food, right? So
mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm,
you must have a, you know, sort of an intrinsic appreciation, you know, from growing up, you know, around your mom.
Totally. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to be able to pick the cook and the con.
Well,
you know, and that,
right?
That's really kind of funny, right?
Well, for your own cooking and at your own restaurant, where do you look for inspiration? You know, we see you up there, you know, as a judge, you know, as a you know, a contestant on some of these things, you know. So, but you must have to look for inspiration as well. So, where do you look?
I mean, that's a great question that I don't get a lot of. Interestingly. Mostly the supermarket, if you can believe it.
Really?
You believe that?
Oh, I love it. Tell me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just shopping for food and seeing what people buy,
uh-huh,
and just seeing what's in the supermarket itself, that's really where I get a lot of inspiration.
Really? Now, so that implies that you are out in the supermarket shopping. So you're out there picking up things for dinner?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do a lot of cooking for my daughter, sometimes for friends, certainly. And then also I just have, you know, I do a lot of recipe testing. I do a lot of, you know, trial and error for my cookbook,
mm-hmm,
for, you know, I even practice, you know, for competition shows, you know, with food. And so I shop and then I sort of say, well, gee, I don't really know how to use that. Maybe I should buy some and, you know, fiddle around with it at home.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's really how I get further inspiration.
Oh, I love that. I guess we don't think of you having to practice.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's actually rare that I get asked this. But, you know, yeah, I'm human too. I buy, you know, sometimes if I buy some potato chips or something, I hide them in the bottom of the cart
now,
in case anybody's peeking at me.
Well, I wondered if people look at you and then see what you're buying, you know?
Oh, totally. Of course. Wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, I would. If I saw you at the local grocery store, I'd be looking in your grocery cart, too.
Oh, yeah. I had someone come up to me, and I was practically in my pajamas.
Oh, no.
And they came down the aisle, and they said, you chopped me.
Oh, my gosh. It was someone who'd been on the show.
Yeah.
Ah.
I was like,
a little awkward,
so
right?
Your day. Definitely. I mean, come on. You know?
Oh, but
yeah.
But can you typically go out and about and do your grocery shopping without people coming up to you and peeking in your basket like I would do?
Yes. I can. I enjoy that privilege. But it's fun. I mean, it's fun to kind of be out and about and see what people are thinking about, what ingredients they're interested in. You know, that never gets old to me. And that's really how I continue to learn myself.
Well, I hope you can get out and about while you're in Indianapolis. Perhaps, you know, try Milk Tooth, which is the restaurant people tend to be talking about these days, the Chef Jonathan Brooks.
Noted.
Yeah, noted,
noted,
right?
Noted in my file.
So I hope you have a wonderful time in Indianapolis, and I hope to see you at the Fantastic Food Fest.
Aw, thanks so much. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. Thanks again.
We've been talking with celebrity chef Alex Guarnaschelli, executive chef at Butter in New York City, and a regular judge on Chopped, and who is appearing at the Fantastic Food Fest in Indianapolis. For more information on the chef, check out alexguarnaschelli.com. And for festival information, go to fantasticfoodfest.com. January, but it's time to start thinking about one of the city's premier food events, even if it doesn't take place until June. Zoobilation this year is set for June 9th, but tickets for the zoo's massive fundraiser go on sale February 1st, and typically sell out within hours. So it seemed like the right time for a Zoobilation preview. Today we're talking with Emily and Matt Lyle, co-chairs of the restaurant committee, about just what people can expect at the gala. The fundraiser this year has a tropical adventure theme, so we'll talk about the macaws that will soon be flying around the zoo, but we'll also hear about the food and drink, which with more than 70 restaurants participating has become a main draw for the thousands of guests at the zoo's Black Tie Gala.
This year's theme is going to be the tropical adventure, so we're excited that the zoo will be bringing in some macaws this year. They're actually already in place. They are just weaning and getting ready.
Oh, so we have baby macaws right now.
We have baby macaws right now, and what's exciting about the macaws is they're going to be free flying over the zoo.
So during Zoobilation?
We're hoping during Zoobilation. We will see with their flight patterns, but you can expect in the summertime to be able to look up, see the macaws flying over the zoo.
Over the whole zoo. Not hemmed in anywhere.
So we were very excited about that. When they are housed, they'll be with the lemurs. In that area, I think it's back by Forest. But we were very excited.
Oh, my goodness.
But on that note, the zoo has had to send out communications and contact local nearby residents and make them aware of the fact that they may see a giant macaw in their front yard or in a tree. It's completely normal.
And it's okay, and they won't fly away and fly off to the Amazon or wherever it is they're from?
They will not. They're really food-driven.
Of course.
Right, they'll come back to where the food is, and they, of course, want to stick together as a team. So they like to stay together when they're flying.
So it's a flock of macaws.
It is a flock of macaws, so we were very excited.
Oh, that's fun. So that's fun. I mean, even if you're not going to Zoobilation, it's fun to look forward to be able to see the macaws flying around the zoo and the nearby neighborhoods. That's great.
Absolutely. And in coordination with the new macaw exhibit, the zoo is opening what they're referring to as the Bicentennial Park, which will be, as you enter the zoo, a massive undertaking that will almost create a false canopy.
That sounds good.
It's an indoor-outdoor structure, so it's made out of all natural materials. There will be some rain gardens included, and it's just going to be a really exciting experience, especially because it will be open for Zoobilation.
Oh, my goodness. So we'll be able to see that if we go to Zoobilation.
Correct. You will.
You will.
So now, Zoobilation, if people might not be familiar with it, describe it a little bit for me so people might get an idea of what this fundraiser gala is.
Well, Zoobilation, and it's presented by in coordination with Indianapolis Power and Light, is the largest black tie fundraiser in Indiana. Last year, the event itself raised more than $2 million for animal care and conservation programs specifically at the Indianapolis Zoo.
So this is a big deal.
Oh, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's the largest fundraiser in the state and one of the largest for any of the privately owned zoos in all of America. So,
wow. So now how many people come to Zoobilation? Because it does get quite crowded.
It does get quite crowded. Approximately 5,000 people attend.
Oh, my goodness.
And that isn't including the 70-plus restaurants.
So you have all the people that are serving the food and working the event as well.
Exactly. We also have 13 bars that are available. So you have bartenders. We have a lot of different concerts going on. So we have the musicians and sometimes dancers.
So describe it. So when people come in, because, you know, there's red carpets, there's crowds of people. What's it like when you come in?
It's not anything like going to the zoo. When you walk in, you just feel like you've been transformed into a new environment with the red carpet. Everyone is dressed to the nines, with the exception, right, of tux shorts sandals.
Now, it is a dress-up event, but people get very creative with their dressing up and kind of stick to the theme, right?
They do. So a lot of times the themes in the past have been, like, go wild, and people will wear animal print. It is almost a regular occurrence that gentlemen will wear tux tops, but tux shorts
flip-flops. I have to say that I do notice the men in the tuxedo shorts often with flip-flops. So there is a question of whether that's a fashion don't or not.
For jubilation, I think it's a do. And my husband, Matt, would tell you that's probably his favorite part.
It truly is. I can't tell you how much I love an event where you can get dressed up for black tie but still manage to be comfortable down on your feet with flip-flops.
Now, that is some of the advice that I give to people if they are going to Zubilation, because I get to go and I often get to judge the food events, is to wear comfortable shoes, because it's a big zoo.
100%.
And the food is spread all over the zoo. So tell me about the restaurant booths and what people can expect for that.
So we have more over than 70 restaurants that participate, A lot of people don't know is that the restaurants donate all of their time and all of the food. So I think last year we had over 250,000 entrees that people could try out. They are small plate size, but it's anywhere from appetizer, entree to dessert.
My goodness.
The restaurants that are there are all really competing for best entree.
That's right. So there's a competition going on,
there
too.
There is a competition, and it's quite a stiff competition. Restaurants really get into it. Last year, best appetizer was Ruth Chris.
That's kind of hard to beat shrimp or steak or, you know.
It is.
St. Elmo's took a prize last year, but they took actually best decor.
Oh, they didn't know. See, now tell me a little bit about that, because there's a competition going on with that as well.
There is.
Just as we encourage the attendees to get into the spirit and to go
dress
wild
with the theme, right?
Absolutely. So do we encourage the restaurants. So they decorate their booths and everything from costumes that the chefs and the servers wear to...
The booth decor itself, right?
Exactly.
It is a interesting undertaking from some and an amazing effort from so many others.
Now, Matt, you have shepherded some of the judges around in the past. You were on the group that I was with one year. So what's that like?
Well, I tell you, it's pretty nice, because there I get to kind of play the... I don't want to call it the bad guy, but I get to play the VIP escort, so I can slip up into the front of line and let them know that I have judges with me. And it's amazing how quickly they serve you when you let them know that the people judging
how
are.
And it's also part of your job as shepherding judges around is to make sure they move through it in a timely fashion, right? Because there's a lot to taste.
Not that judges
taste everything. They have an assigned area, right?
We do. We try to break them down into smaller groups, because, again, with 70 restaurants, that would take you all night and probably a couple different sittings. So we try to break them apart, give everybody a little bit of sampling of each of the different areas, and then we'll calculate and tabulate all the judges' scores collectively to kind of determine who wins the various prizes that are offered up during the Zubilation.
And that's tabulated during the event itself?
It is. We try to always award the restaurants their prizes during Zubilation so that the people there are aware of it, and either through various social media outlets. Every year we have a Twitter team that is going around
right?
the zoo and updating people on the happenings of the event, either through that. And now we've even developed a smartphone app.
Oh, that is awesome. Okay, now that was up and running last year, right?
It was. That was our first year trying it, and it definitely was a little bit of trial and error, but we've learned so many great things, and it turned out to be such a great tool that we got a really positive reaction from all the attendees. And again, it's another way to let everyone there know who all's there. Because again, like you say, it's such a large zoo. Sometimes you get caught in one area and you end up spending hours.
Right. You're over there wanting to try all the food in this little area, but then you have to get over there to the other side of the zoo as well so that you can, you know, at least see what all the offerings are.
Get a taste. And that's we are pretty adamant about spreading the wealth, as we like to call it. Some of our favorite restaurants and some of the ones that attend year after year, they have their certain spots that they like, and we like to keep them there if possible. But we definitely want to have a little bit of everything all over the zoo so that no matter where you are, you get a taste.
That's right. You can get your nicey treat over here, yeah. and you can get your St. Elmo shrimp cocktail over here.
Exactly.
That is.
One nice thing, too, is if you're not a judge and you don't have the privilege of being a judge, we do a People's Choice Award.
Now, that's very important, too, because people can vote for their favorite of all sorts of categories, right?
Correct. And that's helpful with the app because you can actually mark your favorites. So as you go through the event via the app, you can star the restaurant for if you like it or if you don't. It'll also provide any coupons that the restaurant may want to offer to a Zubilation attendee. But more importantly, it allows them to vote for the People's Choice Award, so we can announce that as well.
That's right. So People's Choice Award, there's food and there's drink categories, right? You have to say that there's a lot to drink at Zubilation as well.
13 different bars over the whole course of the zoo, and that doesn't include a lot of our great corporate sponsors will purchase what we call dens, which are kind of roped off areas where people can have tables and sit down and rest themselves. But each of those dens also has a personalized bar and bartender in them for these companies that donate their time and money.
It is a little it is an extravaganza, right?
Certainly is.
There's so much food, so much to drink, so much to try. Desserts as well, like you said.
Absolutely.
You know?
Blondie's Cookies actually took the Best Dessert Award last year.
That's always a favorite.
It truly tough to beat there. But you're exactly right. Zubilation, on its surface, is completely about indulgence and celebration. But you get to indulge and celebrate for a cause that does so much wonderful.
Now, it raises lots and lots of money for the zoo, which is particularly important for our zoo.
Absolutely.
Now, since we are talking about the money that it raises, we need to talk about ticket prices because it isn't inexpensive.
It's not. Now, if you are a member of the zoo, general admission prices are $275, which will allow you into the zoo after a certain time, and then you're there for the entire night. There is a premium experience for zoo members. That is $375, so the price has increased. Now, for non-zoo members, so if you're not a member of the zoo, the prices are a little bit higher, $300 mm-hmm. for general admission and $500 for premium experience.
Right, so that's the early admission VIP kind of ticket.
Correct. So not only do they get to go right before the crowd, but they also have access to the Dolphin Pavilion, which is the only area that is air conditioned.
Oh my goodness, Nancy, that's key.
In mid-June, it really is. That's a big selling point.
It is a big selling point. Previously, they've had really nice bars down there, as well as areas to get your hair and makeup fixed, because
depending on
the heat.
Well, because, like you said, it is June, and now we've had some challenging weather in the past for Zubilation, right?
We have been. We've been blessed the last few years, though. I think 2 years ago we had some threatening rain that magically and mysteriously just parted the ways around the zoo and gave us great weather for the evening. But that's always the big nervous talk among all the volunteers the day of or the week before, because gosh, that's the one thing that's not in our control. So.
And it is a rain or shine event.
It is a rain or shine event. I was actually setting up, because not a lot of people know, we close the zoo the day of the event. So June 9th, it will be closed for tons of volunteers, approximately 800, to come in and set up for Zubilation. And it was pouring down rain.
Oh, my goodness.
So all of us got sopping wet. But it was still so much fun. Such a great experience to be able to volunteer and spend time with all the volunteers, right, getting ready and getting to see the animals without big crowds is always a good time.
Well, now tell me where people can look for some more information about Zubilation, the zoo, the new app, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, the Indianapolis Zoo's website is a great wealth of information, and especially to see all the upcoming projects and new animals that are coming. We've had some exciting new announcements with the orangutans that recently came in last year. And so I'd certainly direct people to the zoo's website. Otherwise, on any of your smartphones, simply go into download an app and search Zubilation. Luckily, it's the only – there's not too many of those events like this across the U.S., so it's pretty easy to find.
You can follow the zoo on, obviously, Facebook or Instagram. You can also follow Zubilation specifically on both social media networks, so you get information all the time. I think it's a lot of fun to follow Zubilation because they'll post pictures that they take throughout the night. So if you are lucky enough to be captured, you can find that picture and tag yourself in it.
It is, and it's always fun, you know, to see all the hashtags IndieZoob. So it is a fun event in early June, but tickets go on sale in February. So keep checking that website at the Indianapolis Zoo to find out when you can get them, because they do always sell out, right?
Every year, and quite honestly, usually pretty quickly. So want to encourage anybody that hasn't been to get out there and attend and see the amazing work that the zoo's doing. But don't think about it too long, because there won't be tickets after February, I can promise you that.
We've been talking Zubilation with Emily and Matt Lyle, Restaurant Committee co-chairs for the Indianapolis Zoo's June 9th fundraiser. Tickets for the Black Tie event go on sale February 1st. For more information, go to IndianapolisZoo.com. Listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, Central Indiana's source for news and interviews on our local food community. We've been talking with celebrity chef Alex Guarnaschelli and Zubilation Restaurant Committee co-chairs Emily and Matt Lyle. Still ahead on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, we'll be checking out Literally Divine Chocolates in Fountain Square with chocolatier Suzanne Literal, and we'll be talking about our new recipe box project with Chef Tom England. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you can find me and Eat, Drink, Indie on Facebook or go to eatdrinkindie.com. Talking a lot about events so far today here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, but also this week we get to talk about chocolate. I headed to Fountain Square recently to talk with Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates at her new shop. Suzanne moved the shop from Greenfield a few months ago to the new address in Fountain Square in the former Funk Yard Coffee location, so it was time to check in and see what's up. Suzanne fills us in on what fans can find in the new digs. Hint: it includes coffee in addition to chocolates and even plenty of vegan options. And she also catches us up on just how she got started making her popular chocolates and toffees.
I was able to relocate my entire operation. People ask me, so do you still have the shop in Greenfield? And I said, no, I relocated everything. I can only handle one location at a time right now. And so I had, there's this big wide open space with the coffee area in this space, in this shop. And I build a partition and make all my chocolates with behind that partition. And
so all the magic happens right here.
It does. So, and people love that. And I think it's pretty cool. However, it might only last so long, because with the way things are going, it could be like a year or so, I might have to find another production location. But I want to keep this and make it more into a destination. And it's predominantly a chocolate shop that serves coffee. Of course, I have plans on doing ice cream in the near future. So it's going to kind of turn into a sweets shop. and just, you know, more of a place that people can, you know, I want to say people that learn about the brand, they're like, oh, okay, that's where it's located. We have to go see what it's all about.
Oh, absolutely. Now tell me what you make here in the shop, in the production area.
I make everything that I've always made. All the toffees, the caramels, or caramels. Of course, you know, from where I'm from, we say caramels. But and then truffles. Yeah, so that's basically, I try to carry a good variety of things, and I'm working like all the time, just trying to, you know, keep up the stock, and that's really all I plan on doing. And here right now, I don't do any baking. I want to keep this a gluten-free facility, although there are a couple offerings that do have cookies in them, and I bake the cookies, but, you know, I bake them off-site.
So now you do the vegan treats too, right?
Yes, yes. That I knew that would be pretty well-received here, and I was right. And so I'm trying to get up production with that. I was able to make the truffles and the caramels right now. The toffee is a little more complicated because, you know, I actually engineer the recipe, and it's not the easiest process. I say the traditional toffee is, well, for me, because I've done it thousands of times, it's a no-brainer. But the vegan, yeah, it's I'm still like almost there, but not quite. And I'm just like, okay, in another week or so, I will get the toffee in the shop. I promise you, vegan customers, you'll have more options. They have options right now, but, you know, it'd be nice to have more.
Well, yeah, it's always nice to have more. Now, other things that you're working on, like working from cocoa beans, right?
Yes, that is something that is a direction I have my heart in pursuing, because I started, when was it? October. It was like Halloween weekend, 2015. Yeah, gosh. See, I'm a dates person, but yeah, that was my first batch of chocolate from the bean. So
now, how'd that go?
Yeah. Oh. Do you want to hear my first experience? So, okay. It was not glamorous at all. It wasn't like the big, you know, pieces of equipment. It was the oven at home, roasting the beans. And then I had some kind of blender. I was able to crack up the beans and get the skins, you know, the shells loosened up. And then I put it all in a big bowl, went on my front porch with a hairdryer, and proceeded to blow off the shells.
So this is very high tech, right?
So high tech. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah. But this is fun. I don't think people, you know, imagine that you can do this and learn how to make chocolate from the bean itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was just so cool. I think it's just like a whole nother world opens up, because people don't realize, oh, chocolate can taste so different. You can like get beans from different countries, and each country totally different flavor profiles. And it's just fascinating to me how it can all come together and the experiences. It's pretty cool.
Now, how did you get into chocolate in the first place?
Wow. So, I mean, I got into chocolate when I was a kid because I was a huge fan. And I for some reason, never really got enough chocolate in my life.
Well, really, can we have enough chocolate, you know?
I think I was the underprivileged as far as chocolate. Well, anyway, so I've always been like a chocolate freak. And I finally got my first opportunity to make real chocolates. I never really got to experience like real chocolates, probably until my 20s. It's like, it's always been like mass produced. And I didn't know any better, so I'm like, yeah. But in my 20s, and then like, oh, yeah, there's Godiva, which at the time, for me, that was pretty cool. And then finally, I was living in Nashville, Tennessee, mid-90s. I got to go to a chocolate fest.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. My first one. That was very cool. And they were passing out booklets of recipes. And one of the recipes, of course, I grabbed one of the booklets, and one of the recipes was brandy chocolate truffles. That's how it all started, really.
With a brandy chocolate truffle.
Pretty much. Although I didn't have any brandy at the time, so I just used a bunch of vanilla.
Well, how did the first ones come out?
They were good. Yeah. And, you know, I brought some in to coworkers at the time, and they just said, wow, these are really rich. But then I moved on to another company, and like that Christmas, I brought them in. They love them. And I had done some different flavors, and then finally I kind of like fine tuned, and then I discovered almond toffee. Yeah, I was like, oh, I love almond roca. I want to make something just like almond roca, and I had the recipe, and all of a sudden through many batches, I got the hang of it, and then that started becoming like the most popular. What I gave to my friends and family.
So then it became a thing.
Yeah, it was kind of a thing. Yeah, in fact, you know, two women don't know they still don't know each other to this day. I can't believe this. I still say this like to this day. It's been like how many years? And they, each of them, were encouraging me to sell the almond toffee. They just kept, you know, kind of like pestering me. And it's kind of wild, you know, thinking about it, how, you know, that it was, they were so persuasive. It seemed, because I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. It's too hard. Starting a business, making candy. Oh, gosh.
So you didn't think you could do it?
At first, no. But then I was like, well, okay, maybe if I streamline the processes and try to get to where I could stand doing it all the time. And that's what I did. And then I, you know, made a promise to myself that I was going to stick with it. This is it. You know, I'm not going to just be like, oh, I'll have my business going for a couple of years and have some fans and then be like, no, that's not really fun anymore. I want to move on to something else. I didn't do that. I was like, no, this is it. You're going to do it.
We've been talking with Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates, now located in Fountain Square. For more information, go to literallydivinetoffee.com or look for it on Facebook. Here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, and we need to do a little cooking today because I think we could all use a little home cooking, a little comfort, don't you think? The Recipe Box Project here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio aims to do just that, to take a look at family recipes, cook them here with you, and enjoy and celebrate the food that makes us feel good, that brings us together, that brings back memories. I was cooking recently with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College for the very first installment of the Recipe Box Project, and the memories were one of the best parts. In this case, the memories of cooking with Mom.
So I'm going to start making a little stock here.
Uh-huh.
In the absence of a peeler, I'm peeling my potato with a knife here. My mom, of course, would do this in her hand.
Oh, right, with the little paring knife, right?
It always scares me to death.
I know, my mom always used a paring knife, and one time she was peeling potatoes at my house, and I handed her a potato peeler. She said, can I just have a little knife?
Yeah, exactly. That's my mom, who actually has been a professional chef all of my life, but she still peels
those
potatoes with a paring knife in her hand, yeah.
Memories are in the details, you know? How something looked, or tasted, or smelled. For our first Recipe Box Project dish, we were making something that Chef Tom called Popeye. At its heart, it's chicken and noodles. We're still not sure where the name Popeye comes from. It's not from the cartoon character. It could be a variation on pot pie, we decided. And you can indeed find references online to similar dishes called Popeye. But the dish is way more than a name. It's something that can evoke memories about what it tasted like, what it smelled like, even how the kitchen looked and felt.
And so this would be simmering at the house all day. So, it would be 6 hours of just this smell in the house.
Exactly.
The first cold day of the year is when she would do it first, right?
See, that's beautiful right now because, you know.
All the doors are closed, I could still now see the moisture on the windows.
Steamed up. Steamed up kitchen windows. Yeah, how cool is that?
But it's important, I think, to keep these family recipes alive, you know, to take them out of the recipe box and actually make them. And when you do that, you learn something. It's kind of a connection in a way, making something that someone else has made, doing something that they've done. And when it's a family recipe, you know that it's a recipe that's doable, even if it might sound a little intimidating, like the noodles that Chef Tom is making. Even though making homemade noodles might sound challenging, as it turned out, it's a pretty basic recipe. But even in the easiest recipes, there are still ways to make it your own, as Tom found out when he asked his mother about her recipe.
So you're going to make these noodles from scratch, exactly, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I think that's something that maybe could intimidate people, you know, making noodles from scratch.
There's only two ingredients in noodles.
I think it sounds more complicated than it really is.
It does. It does sound more complicated for sure. So we're just going to take the flour and eggs.
Okay.
I was talking to my mom last night as I was preparing for this.
Oh, see, that's great.
And, you know, she's so excited that we're doing this. And then she tells me a few things that she's never told me before. So she's given me this recipe.
So you got some secrets about this recipe.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, like all good, I think, family recipes, there's always one or two things that aren't written down.
Yeah, and I never know if that's on purpose.
Yes.
Because that way, if I give you my recipe, here's most of the recipe, but maybe not that little secret ingredient there.
Well, her secret ingredient is she always put poultry seasoning in with the flour when she made the noodles.
So the noodles are seasoned.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the thing she told me last night is like, by the way, there was always poultry seasoning.
I love that.
I really do love the fact that here was a family recipe, something that his mom had made for him his whole life, an old-fashioned, homey dish that's simple and hearty and heartwarming, and yet there's a secret ingredient. How fun is that? And now he knows. That's how recipes stay alive. I'm sure that the addition of poultry seasoning to the noodles will be added onto the recipe card or jotted down as a note, and just like that, he's come a little closer to recreating a memory. So food and cooking and recipes are pretty powerful stuff. It's interesting to think about that when I look at all the recipes spilling out of my own mom's recipe boxes. Those boxes were the inspiration for the whole recipe box project idea. The notion that wouldn't it be interesting to cook with people and talk with them while they made one of their family recipes. And as we found out as we cooked and talked, there was a lot more going on with that pot of chicken and noodles than just a hearty home-cooked meal.
So, you know, food can really, really does a lot for that welcoming kind of feeling. And I think that's what we all want from a recipe. And when we're cooking for friends or family, you know, you want them to feel welcome and loved,
yeah,
you know? Absolutely.
This is love.
It is,
this
right?
This is love, yeah. That's that definition of comfort food, right?
Yeah.
It's stuff that makes you feel like you're loved and hugged, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that she's making it for you,
right.
You know, because she knows you like it and it makes her feel good to make it for you.
So that's what the Recipe Box Project is all about. The power that we all have to find these old recipes and see what they conjure up. Now, not all old recipes are winners. If you follow along with my food adventures on Facebook, you might see some retro recipes that haven't stood the test of time. I'm thinking here of a ham and banana thing that really didn't work. But when the really well-loved recipes do work, well, there's just something special that happens. You get the taste right, and you remember. You remember the person who cooked it for you, or the look of the kitchen, or who was there. And sometimes it's something as simple as the smell of what's cooking.
That smell is like perfect. And
it is, isn't it?
Yeah. So all those times I've tried to duplicate this before, the smell has never been right. The smell is right today. So, you know, I've got high hopes here.
I think it's that extra little information from mom, right?
The poultry seasoning of all things.
So I hope that's what we can do with the Recipe Box Project here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. I hope we can try some family recipes, figure a few things out, and just cook. Because it isn't complicated, it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need special ingredients to have a special recipe. I think it mostly comes down to just doing it and being willing to give it a try.
People cooking at home. I mean, I look in the refrigerator and see that I have a little bit of pork and a little bit of chicken. Let's make some noodles. So.
You know, so that's the thing that I hope to get across to people, that it isn't hard.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be intimidating. There's no time clock.
Right.
No one's judging you.
So we'll be doing more cooking here on Eat Drink Indie Radio. And you can look for more about our Recipe Box Project segments on eatdrinkindie.com. Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. It has been an event-focused show today with information on the Fantastic Food Fest, which is taking place January 21st and 22nd at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, as well as on Zubilation, whose tickets will be going on sale February 1st. So thank you so much for tuning into the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, celebrity chef Alex Cornicelli, executive chef at Butter in New York City, and a regular guest on CHOP, who will be at the Fantastic Food Fest, Emily and Matt Lyle, co-chairs of the Restaurant Committee for Zubilation, Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates in Indianapolis, and Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie.